Hello and welcome to episode 31 of season 3 of the Connect 2 podcast. My name is Jeff Cullen.
I'm Mark Hughes. Hey Jeff, how are you?
It's another crazy week, man.
Crazy week, yeah.
It's a good thing this is a show about positivity, or else it'd be a 4.5 hour long podcast.
This is true.
Just rants about
stuff. Oh man, yeah. There's stuff. Yeah, there's a mix of stuff.
So
if you're new to the channel, rate, review, and subscribe. We publish usually once a week. I think we're missing next week, but
I think we need to get a Patreon page so we can get some of that sweet, sweet chingo.
Well, it's a very expensive podcast to produce. If you don't know, I'm also the sound engineer for this. Yeah, so
we don't need to cover our costs. It's okay to put some money in your pocket.
Chingo.
This is quality entertainment.
Right.
For free.
Yes, you can just. This is true. And it costs you nothing to subscribe.
Exactly.
Very few things nowadays cost you nothing to subscribe. This
costs, I guess, it costs you some time.
No, it doesn't even do that. You just click the subscribe and all it does
is listening to the show.
Well, yes, that's true.
Mind you, we don't care if you listen, just subscribe. That's true. Just cross that threshold, and after that, you're on your own.
So today we have coffee from Modus Coffee.
Modus Operandi?
Modus Coffee from Vancouver. This coffee is from Nicaragua, which is also close to Nicaragua. It's not one of these mixed with very different locations.
Sorry, did you say it's close to Nicaragua?
Because it's Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so we've had a bunch of beans that were two different
countries. Yes, I was just thinking nowhere near each other. Hybrid beans.
These ones are just from Nicaragua.
Right.
And the notes of milk, chocolate, nuts, and rhubarb.
Mm. What if you mixed beans from two countries that are at war with each other? Would it make for a bitter brew?
It would be unsettled, yes.
This is a Russian
and Ukrainian blend.
Ukrainian blend.
Slightly radioactive.
It's a little bit tempest in a teacup.
Or coffee cup.
That's right.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
There you go.
Bad jokes.
No.
I'll give you one. I will find one.
I got a lot of stuff going on. Yes, a good dad joke. I mean,
my wife is really mad that I have no sense of direction.
Uh-huh.
So I packed up my stuff. My wife is really mad that I have no sense of direction. So I packed up my stuff and write.
There you go.
And dad, why are you staring at the orange juice container? Dad, it says concentrate.
Oh my God. I thought it had a peel.
There you go.
Can you get AI to generate
jokes?
Jokes? Oh, I bet you probably could.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Would it come up with anything original, though?
I think it does.
Wow.
And also, sometimes they're even funny.
There you go.
Much like most dad jokes, especially my dad jokes.
Well, all dad jokes are unfunny. Learning?
Learning. What did you learn in the last week?
Oh, man. It's just been a blur. I'll say that Sora AI from OpenAI is pretty amazing. I was watching a video, basically two guys on YouTube, not complaining about it, but sort of like casting doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Not doubt, concern. But the part that was interesting is the speed of the evolution. Like they were saying, you know, like 18 months ago, we were watching the infamous Will Smith eating spaghetti AI video. Did you see that thing?
Yes.
Yeah. And now.
Now it's like.
Less than 2 years later, this thing is producing amazingly realistic. Now, some of it's a bit odd. Like they have the fashion model whose legs switch. Oh, that's not good.
But I think Will Smith also did a thing about it where he actually was eating spaghetti next to the. He said, "Look what AI can do. Well, look what I can do. It's even better."
Yeah. Shut up, Will Smith. Sit down. Go slap a comedian. It's amazing. So they were saying, "Well, it doesn't, doesn't replace the creative person." Mm-hmm. It may or may not. But I did learn, and I've seen this pop up a few places. A guy was explaining I think it might have been on X, where AI is really going to help. And he goes, it's not in these fantastical things, although there is some element of that, right?
Right, right.
But he says it fixes two problems of human creativity that's going to unleash. The first one is scale, and the second one is access. So he talked about scale. So he says, for instance, very few murders actually get solved, right? Mm. That's why I like that show, you know, 48 hours. If they don't solve it in the first 48, the probability drops off. Yeah, the reason for that is there's just too many things, right?
He goes, too many options,
too many leads. And he goes, you know, and the average detective, he painted a picture of this sort of schlumpy, you know, middle-aged guy who's tired and just doesn't have the resources. Well, you put AI on something where it can check every possible lead, review all of these phone records, and just scale up the investigation. You're going to catch a lot more people with that, right? So there's a whole bunch of examples of that where we know how to do it. We know what, but it's just not cost effective to do it all. But suddenly you put AI on it and it can run massive number of simulations. You have a whole different ball game. The other one was looking for alien life, right?
Right, right.
It's like we have all these astronomers and we're looking at the sky, but there's just not enough people to look at the everywhere, right? So it would be very easy, right? You put AI on it, you get like 100% coverage now and 24/7, whatever is out there, if there's anything out there, the probabilities of catching it go up like exponentially. So that was one. And the other one was accessibility. So he talks about like, imagine somebody is living in some rural part of some third world nation, and they're like the greatest filmmaker, you know, ever in terms of their conceptualization, right? They have this phenomenal story to tell. Well, they're not Steven Spielberg, right? They didn't grow up in California and they didn't have access ever since childhood to all the resources. All of a sudden they do, right? They can get on, as long as they have an internet access, they can use something like this Sora, right? Create a template of their idea and suddenly make it accessible and in a way that never could before. And then suddenly maybe it gets picked up with the traditional system, but never would have had access. So it was like, okay, so it's going to be these mundane issues of scale and access that are really going to change things with AI. It won't be the broad strokes, exciting stuff.
Right? Yeah. I think typically with a lot of technology, it's sometimes the smaller things that just creep in and all of a sudden you're just like,
oh. Yeah. So it was interesting.
So did I talk about, on a previous time, the blue laser thing, the blue, LEDs, sorry.
It seems vaguely familiar, but I don't recall.
So basically, early on, so they came up with these LEDs.
Right.
Two of them were easy to produce.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I think I saw an article on this, but so I didn't
read it.
So there
was green
and
red.
Okay.
So if you're in the 80s, you know, you would have seen lots of LEDs, and they were like little red ones and little green ones. The problem is, from a color perspective.
Very Christmassy.
Well, from a light perspective,
uh-huh.
The only colors that you to create a color, you need three components.
Yep.
You need a red, green, and blue.
Yep.
And together, those three create white.
Yep.
And
RGB, that, baby.
You can create, with combinations, you can create any color.
Yep.
It was easy to produce the red one and then the green one because it's kind of, there's a very specific way they do it to create the color.
Okay.
But it gets harder and harder. So like green is quite a bit harder than red. Red is easy. Green is hard. And then blue was considered impossible.
Impossible.
They figured there was never going to be a way to do this. This is kind of the you know, it was kind of the thing that if they could
the do nirvana,
it would solve everything.
Wow.
And anyway, so there was this semiconductor company in Japan. It was kind of like a second or third tier semiconductor manufacturer.
Okay.
And it was not doing well. And they had this crazy scientist. And he basically was trying all... So anyway, we're not going to do a whole episode on sure. this. But basically, he figured that he would try to do this. And he was a workaholic. He would go in at 7 in the morning, work all day, leave at 7 at night every day, 7 days wow. a week. And he was doing this continuously, trying to... because you have to create this particular... it's a particular oxide and you have to, there's a whole process of manufacturing it.
Sure.
So it's a silicon, it's a manufacturing process. You use these machines and you can, you're basically doing spray deposition to try and create the layers sure. necessary for this. And it's.
Yeah. Now, was he supposed to be working on this or was this, where they're like, Yoshino, where are the reports? And he's like, I'll get to them next week.
Well, you're close. So he basically convinced the head of this company when it was still a kind of a family run thing that he should do this. So they sent him to the U.S. He did this, came back, had the machine. He had spent a whole bunch of time repairing the machine because when he was at university, he didn't speak English well enough.
Okay.
And they kind of dismissed him. So he spent a lot of time repairing the machine. And so he was super familiar with how the process worked and he was able to modify the machine and he was using it to create his own components to
right.
try and test for. And there was like two paths. Everybody figured the blue LED would be down one path, but nobody could get it to work. And there was a simpler path, but the problem is it was too easily to get contaminated. And as soon as it's contaminated, it doesn't work. Hmm. And super complicated. Like it's super complicated from a chemistry perspective.
Right.
But the long and the short of it is that his company, so the president that was there, let him do it. And he just kept working at it pretty much by himself, kind of on his own. And the president, I think, died or retired or whatever. And then a new, more corporate arrangement came in and they kept sending him a note saying, you need to stop doing this. And he would crumple it up and he would throw it in the garbage. And he would get these notes like every day and was like, seriously,
you need every day.
Stop doing this, right? And he would just ignore it and keep doing his own thing. And lo and behold, he produced a blue LED. Like he produced the material that they needed to be able to produce a blue LED, and he got it to work, right?
Wow.
And fundamentally, so this was a huge thing for his company, and his company now, I think it's called Nachi or something like that, and it now produces. Like it's a billion-dollar company.
Tide is busting laundries.
Oh, stop.
Get cold water.
It all the tech. His name. Do I have his name here?
Is he famous now?
Yeah.
Is he wealthy?
Tsuji Nakamura is the guy who did it, and so he's the inventor, and the company I think was called. Like Nachi, and so now like all TVs, everything use patents and stuff developed. He got a $150 bonus and a small raise, and apparently they justified not giving him more money because he kept throwing those notes in the garbage because he was so unruly and disrespectful and
really.
Yeah, and he got his PhD in the process.
Can you imagine? I'd fire that CEO.
So well, he ended up leaving.
You have no vision, sir. No vision.
And he ended up leaving, and he ended up I think he ended up in a different company, and they were doing something similar. And first company kind of sued him for taking their secrets, and he sued them back. He ended up getting an award like of $8 million.
Okay.
Although apparently all of it went to lawyers.
I won.
Exactly.
We won.
Tsuji Nakamura.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so anyway, the blue light emitting diode. So we developed it in 1992.
Wow.
And now everything has it. Everything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah. So
so when he dies.
Well, he's still pretty young.
On his grave.
He's like.
They'll put a blue LED. Me.
I think he's like 60 something.
Okay.
He's not super old.
No.
Anyway, he's doing other stuff. But
sitting at the bus stop, you know.
But his technology is in everything.
I invented the blue LED.
Light bulbs.
Oh, really?
Headlights, everything. Yeah. Everything. And it was like, it was considered unobtainable and almost impossible to produce this blue LED. And he not only, he did it because he was so incredibly stubborn.
Right.
But think of where we would be
awesome.
At if he hadn't done that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One of these, so probably go down in history as one of these pivotal pioneers.
Well, he won a Nobel Prize.
Well, there you go. That's got a few bucks attached to it.
Well, I think so. Well, I don't think it's a lot. I think it's like 150,000 or something.
Is it only that?
Well, I think it was a lot when it's the prestige. First came out. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to see a t-shirt that says they said it couldn't be done and they were right.
You
don't succeed, give up, go home.
So where do you get the most radiation exposure on planet?
The most on the planet?
Yeah.
You mean naturally or?
So radiation.
I mean, I think if you're hanging around the elephant's foot at.
That's true.
At.
Elephant's foot at Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, probably not good.
But it's not. So here's the thing. So there's. So in general.
Okay.
Background radiation. So it is measured in a thing called sieverts.
Right.
Two sieverts will kill you, right?
Two sieverts will kill you.
So most of the doses are measured in a thing
called
micro sieverts.
Yeah.
Okay. And the background, like just outside, most average for the planet is between 0.1 and 0.2 micro sieverts.
Oh, okay. So 0.1 or 0.2 micro sieverts.
So that's how much you get just walking around.
So outside. Two sieverts is orders of magnitude.
Yeah, it's huge. Right. So so you think about so then the question is, well, who gets the most exposure? So and when you have a banana, okay. Banana has potassium.
This is taking a strange turn, but okay.
A banana has potassium and some of it's radioactive. So you end up getting like a 0.01 or no, it's 0.1 of a 0.1 microsieverts in a banana.
I just had one this morning.
Yeah, so there you go. You've had the equivalent of background radiation.
I'm still feeling okay.
Not a big deal.
No.
It's all good. So bananas are kind of safe.
So if you ate 10,000 bananas, you might start having a problem.
Yeah, well, I think you would have a problem, like especially since it bananas. Tends to bung you up.
That yeah, would be exactly.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Pass me the
he
light.
He ate 10 million bananas, then he died. Radiation? No.
Constitution. anyway, so if you kind of compare things, okay. So
where is the place that gets the most radiation?
Well, so there's a bit of a story. So
Banana Republic.
So Chernobyl, you were near Chernobyl. Now Chernobyl, they removed all the topsoil, so all the radioactive topsoil is gone, and that happened like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
In the mid 80s. Right.
Well, they would have removed all the topsoil at the plant.
Well, and
there's that city
for a lot of
Pripyat or something.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it, but Pripyat. And they actually have the place where all the firefighters' clothes were stored. So that's like 5 microsieverts. So that's a lot.
Okay.
So you go from 0.1 to 0.2 to 5. And if you get really close to the fireman's clothing, it's so 5 is the Chernobyl area, and then you get closer to it, it's like 50 or 100 for
microsieverts. Still, it starts to get up there.
Starting to get up there, and if you go to Fukushima,
right,
they're in the process of removing the topsoil now. It's a bit higher. It's like 20.
Wow.
wide receivers. If you... So
like, where are you putting it? Never mind.
Now, these are... That's the Fukushima exclusion zone. Right. If you fly on a plane, the higher you go, the more you get exposed. So, if you go at about 12,000 feet, it's about 1 microsievert. 2 microsieverts at like 25,000. And 3 at like 40,000.
Wow. So, they don't... They should have a disclaimer on your ticket.
Right. Well, they should.
As if people don't worry about enough stuff already.
So,
are you getting on that plane?
People that get more are astronauts. Astronauts get even more, right? So they'll get quite a number of microsieverts in the planet. But it's not the people that have the most exposure
on the ISS.
Yeah, ISS.
Some people have been there for. Like well over, what's the record, 720 days or maybe longer now?
It is, but it's not the people that are exposed to the most radiation. People that are exposed to the most radiation are smokers. And it's like...
What?
It's like an order of magnitude higher than the
people. So a cigarette is radioactive?
Yeah, because it's burning two components within the tobacco that turn radioactive, and that is... So a smoker's lungs are more radioactive than the exposure you get on the ISS.
You think they would have said something.
It's healthy for you.
Now, is that one of them French Gitane cigarettes?
No.
One of the big problems with cigarettes, what I understand, I remember reading about this, is it's not just tobacco. It's the multitude of chemicals that are mixed into it. Right.
I think there's
some like crazy list of, like, when you look at what's in a cigarette, it's insane. There's like 10,000 compounds, or maybe not that much, but there's a lot of different chemical compounds. It's not just like a plant you're rolling up and smoking.
What's really interesting is years and years ago, so when I was first moved to Edmonton, I got interviewed for a company called Celanese.
Oh yeah.
Which was in the east end of Edmonton, and they had a cigarette filter manufacturing. So they made the filters, and the filters are super interesting. It was super interesting at the time.
They're chemical too, though.
Right? Yeah, and they're like these fibers. They're like a polymer fiber that are, and they're longitudinal, so along the filter.
Right.
And they're really trying to, they were at the time trying to make it so that there was very little variation from year to year in terms of how, because they don't want any change in the flavor.
Right. So what are they filtering out?
That's a good question. I don't know. I just remember that it was like watching
a bank. You didn't get
bank,
the job.
No, I did not get the job. It was like watching, though, a bank of... sewing machines, because you've got these super thin threads that they're producing in order to create these bundles that were the filters.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
So anyway, they like, so Mark, do you smoke? And you're like, no.
No. Oh, that's it. You're done.
It would help if you did. Yeah. Make us feel like you're part of the problem, not the solution.
So let's talk about today.
Today
we're talking about the Apple Car. So today is... February the 28th.
Don't upset
the Normally, Apple it's the end of the month, but because it's a leap year, tomorrow is the end of the month.
Right.
And last night,
Last night/this morning,
Apple has officially announced that they're discontinuing their development of the Apple Car.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. They, you know, it's been, apparently, it's one of the biggest.
So that is a very surprising development.
It is a very surprising. They've been working on this for 10 years.
Yeah.
And in 10 years, they have infiltrated cars a whole bunch. So there is a lot of Apple in your car right now.
Interesting.
Surprisingly.
So why? Well, but I'll just be quiet.
What they were supposed to be doing was developing an EV based car.
Right.
And that was autonomous, so it had no steering wheel and, you know, was basically very different.
That might be a little extreme. I think people would feel better even if there was a dummy steering wheel that you could hang on to.
Well, the Google car, when it first was being prototyped and developed, was in fact without a steering wheel as well.
Yeah, that's a bridge too far.
Yeah. Well, so I think they've decided to turf it. Now, they have apparently spent about $10 billion in the last 10 years. And apparently in Silicon Valley, it's the biggest secret that everybody knows. Like,
right.
What's the description when you know everybody knows the secret? It's the worst kept secret.
Worst, yes. That's okay.
So the project was called Titan.
Okay.
And if you lived in apparently Silicon Valley, you would actually see these cars, these Apple-based cars driving around because they were testing it.
Right.
And they had...
So why did they kill it?
Well, you know, I think... I don't know for sure. I do know that they had reached kind of a breaking point earlier this year in January and said they were like in the decision point is a go or no go.
Wow.
And now I think you're reading Elon Musk's book.
Yep.
Have you gotten to the Tesla part?
No.
Okay. So the Tesla part is super interesting because it kind of highlights Elon's struggle with trying to develop a car from a Silicon Valley perspective.
Mm.
Because a lot of people in Silicon Valley think, well, it's just like anything else. You're going to manufacture it this way. Convention thinks that if you are going to make a widget, whatever it is, we have microphones in front of us.
Sure.
If you decide that you want to be a microphone maker,
yep.
There's like two or three different ways you could do this. And one way is you can go to somebody that makes microphone and have them make your particular microphone. So you contract that out to somebody else. The other thing is you could go and say, okay, well, here's the parts of our microphone. I'm going to buy this from this guy and this from this guy.
Right,
and this from this guy and this from this guy. And then the third way is to make it all yourself.
Okay. Sure.
And with Tesla, Elon Musk discovered very early on with cars that there was a huge problem. If he went and tried to sub it out to somebody else, you ended up with a lot of conventional engineering stuff.
Yeah.
And then you have to put your markup on top of their markup.
Right.
And then the margins are so narrow that you end up with a car that's too expensive compared to everybody else's cars.
Right.
The second thing is, and the same problem occurs when you try and source out all of these parts.
Sure.
You've heard this before or you probably have heard about this. Like if you take a car apart and sell all the parts, it is worth a lot more than the car together.
Right.
Right. The sum is worth less than the parts.
Yeah.
And so the problem is.
Because
if you're manufacturing it and you're buying all these parts.
Yeah.
Now your car is, the sum is worth the sum of the parts. It's not cheaper.
Right.
You can't sell it at a loss. That's just no good. Yeah. And in particular, with EVs, the original concept, they actually took a whole bunch of, they were using laptop batteries. They're basically using lithium ion batteries from laptops, stacking them to create these huge bundles to have the rechargeability and the functionality that you were looking for. Anyway. So Elon rapidly discovered that in order for him to be able to make a car, he needed to make all the parts and he had to find a way to make as many of those parts in-house. And, both SpaceX and Tesla, they do a lot of their own R&D and their own, own product. And it's because it was the only way to even close to make it economical. And even still, EVs
allowed him to do some, well, they are, although that new Japanese BYD.
I don't know anything about it.
Sorry, Chinese company.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're about to blow everybody out of the water.
Yeah.
Except they say Tesla. So they just release a sedan, $15,000 US.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, so
China, Africa, they're going after all of the other markets
over
Asia.
When you think about Apple would have been, you know, basically trying to compete with the Teslas, like for a high-end,
right,
you know, premium model.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they would have run into this thing. And the other problem is...
So they really would have been kind of outside of their lane. right?
Well, they kept hiring. So they hired a lot of talent, ex-Tesla people. Right. They hired people from BMW, GM. Like, sure. There's a whole raft of, I mean, they've got amazing talent. They have 2,000 people working on this project.
Right.
So
I'm surprised they haven't decided to spin it off as a separate company and sell the tech. Say, look, you guys go figure it out.
Right. Well, that may be that. Well,
because I can't imagine they're just gonna, all right, gather up all them data and information, just put it in the shitter, right? That they're gonna somehow have to implement, or like they could sell it to a third party manufacturer. Like, there's got to be some value residual.
Well, I read this interesting article. So before we get there, I think the issue that they're going to run into is what Tesla is running into.
Right.
Is twofold. One is just producing a car is freaking expensive.
Okay? Right.
So like there are not a lot of new car manufacturers because of this margin issue, and it's heavily regulated. So there's a ton of regulation in terms of what you can produce and how to make it.
And I've been watching videos that say just conventional, like in the States, I don't know about Canada, that there's a real problem with lots that have immense numbers of vehicles on them. These dealerships,
yeah.
We're talking like, so a bunch of these car guys are going and they're touring these lots and saying like, look at the inventory that they're carrying. Well, exactly. Right? And they're seeing these massive markdowns on, you know, pickup trucks and cars. And it's like, this thing is like $20,000 off sticker price because there's fucking 80 of them here.
Exactly.
Right.
So that is just to produce a car.
Yeah.
They're trying not to produce a car, but trying to produce an EV, which is cutting edge of cars.
Yeah.
And then
computer on wheels, basically.
And they're trying to go even one step further. So they're not trying to just get into the market. They're trying to accelerate to the front of the bleeding edge of the market.
Right.
Because they also want it to be autonomous with no steering wheel. So, and look at the problems that Tesla's having with autonomous vehicle or self-driving vehicles.
Right.
And they have a steering wheel, right? They have drive. So I think from what you see in the development from, at least from the book on Elon and what he went through with Tesla, you can understand where the off-ramp is for Apple and why it probably became too complicated.
Yeah.
However, the other thing is Apple is already in 98% of all the cars.
That's what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. So what Apple did was basically produce this thing called CarPlay.
Oh, yeah.
And basically you take your car.
Whatever.
You plug your phone into your car. Yeah,
we have it on now our, the touch on our screen, Sub.
Yeah. And then now the touch screen is all... And
they the icons are the same as on their phone, on your iPhone.
Exactly. Yeah, and they have completely dominated this area. Now, Android went and produced...
There's a Google Play, or I guess it's an Android, right?
It came out about a year and a year and a half after Apple.
Too late, Bubba.
So Apple kind of set the stage and set the tone.
Right.
But basically, if you buy a vehicle, 98% of them have the facility to be able to use
Apple Play,
Apple CarPlay, and they've kind of dictated.
And that's across the board, not just EVs. Like we have a Subaru, gas powered car, and it's got it.
Yep, that's exactly it. So they basically, without having to spend $10 billion on a new car, they've kind of insinuated themselves into cars, and I can see that translating into more sophisticated because I mean, so a lot of these car manufacturers are trying to create their own versions of it, but everybody just wants just use my phone.
Exactly.
Just use my phone.
Yeah.
Because and Google's I think Google's is not as slick or as locked down as Apple CarPlay. I'm sure it works fine. My wife used to have no end of problems with her Android phone with her vehicle.
So I have to say, I hadn't heard this, but I'm impressed because, you know, but especially for a publicly traded company. So first of all, $10 billion sounds like a lot of money
over 10 years.
And to you and I, or but to Apple, they're like, we spend that on lunch, you know, come on, that's nothing, right? And so, you know, one of the hardest things to do in industry, particularly in publicly traded, is to avoid that sunk cost fallacy, right?
Right.
Because it's like, oh my God, we've invested $10 billion.
Well, to me, that is a brilliant example of how not falling into the sunk cost fallacy.
Are we going to invest another $10 billion and then
what do you end up
lose with? $100 billion because it just doesn't, we can't get there? No. We'll just kill this thing now and try to get, you know, recoup if whatever they can. No, I think it's a smart decision.
Well, and they've decided that these 2,000 people that they have that were working on this are really bright, and they're just going to move them into other areas. So they've identified, you know, where the heads of these guys are going. So this is, so it's kind of, I mean, it's this worst kept secret. I mean, they had a VP of it. They had like all of these.
Sure. Absolutely.
People working on this, and they're just moving them to different parts of Apple and to,
I mean, if they can
focus on AI and spatial computing.
And VR,
yeah,
right? Like those goggles, I don't know, haven't heard too much about them since they came out, right?
Well, apparently they're pretty cool.
They are pretty cool.
And those will be
mass adoption is a bit of a problem.
Well, but I think what you're going to end up with, these are the ones that are the super high end, and then you'll end up with like the, well, is it Facebook that has the Ray-Bans? They have these Ray-Ban glasses that basically they look like Ray-Bans, and there's some cross marketing there. But they're basically, they're like Google Glass.
Yeah.
Except it's Facebook and it's
Ray-Ban.
It's a Ray-Ban.
Yeah.
And it's actually, apparently they work reasonably well.
Sure.
And apparently one of the things that Apple has planned is a combination AirPod glasses thing.
Ah.
So then you will have, so the big visual spatial thing will be kind of like the Lamborghini, and then you're going to get the smaller ones with much stripped down abilities.
But for the average person, and maybe the big ones are more of an industrial application, and or gaming, you know, they're going to be specialized.
Well, this is the thing. Microsoft is like, what the hell are you doing, right? Like, you're not the first ones to do this, because Microsoft has been doing a version of these masks for VR, but pretty much exclusively for industrial and commercial settings.
Right.
So they'll put it on, and apparently they're way more comfortable, and they're more utilitarian driven.
Like, we bought a Meta Quest 2 a year ago at Christmas. So they immediately sell the aftermarket rig to make it more comfortable.
Right? Yeah.
And we haven't used it very often.
No.
And I keep saying, I want to play with that some more, because it is pretty cool, but it's cutting edge stuff, right? Honestly, it makes me kind of sick. There's a really good World War II game. I can only play it for about an hour.
Well, this is,
and then I start to feel queasy, and it's like, oh man, I'm going to toss my cookies
here. Part of the thing is, and if they can get it smaller, but it has all these cameras and it does all kinds of crazy stuff. But what's really cool is you open it and you have your MacBook in front of you, and it blanks out the MacBook and it creates a new screen, and you get as big a screen as you want.
See, that's cool.
That's very cool. Well, so then you're just sitting there. Yeah.
It's the gaming. Now, I did see a company, third party, that have created the first commercial version of, the rig from Ready Player One.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually like a roller ball. So you're VRing on it, but you actually can move. Okay. And that's part of the problem. Like, I had this really good game based on The Exorcist, and it's terrifying. Oh my God. You know, you put this helmet, this is a PS4 one, right? It's available on the Meta. You put this on, and there's a part where you're in this church. You remember The Exorcist?
Yeah. Well,
I vaguely remember. You're in this church, and the front of the church is lit up, but the back is all like dark, right? And the way the light plays, and it is so immersive, even though it's not, you know, you can see the pixelation a little bit, but it's pretty close, right? But the problem with it is, if you want to turn, you don't physically turn. You have a joystick, right? So you turn, like the world turns, And that makes you sick. So after a while, right? Like what I found I had to do is start kind of turn my head at the same time just to give that proprioception. But without it, if you're just standing there still and you say, oh, I want to go to the right now, you push the button and then like the whole room goes, right? Your brain goes, fuck, that don't feel right. And eventually you start to feel sick. But if you just move a little bit, but with this thing, you actually physically turn, or if you want to move, you physically walk. And so what I understand is it removes a lot of that feeling of like emotion disconnect, because you are, your body doesn't know, it just feels like it's walking, right?
That's right. That's right.
I don't know what this thing is worth, like $6,000 or whatever, but it's very early stage. And then you've got like the harness.
So keep you get, in one place.
Well, also if you get like hit, like you feel the,
oh really?
That's kind of cool. Yeah. What do they call it? Not proprioception. My kids know the word. It's like haptic. It's called a haptic suit.
Haptic suit.
Yeah. So I can see them making more advances than that, where, you know, you could be operating a drone, but you're the drone, right? Or operating the an undersea ROV, right? Which, by the way, I have another cool game on the PS4 where you get to go down to Titanic and you're in like a submersible, right? And you're controlling. The weird part is when you want to deploy the ROV,
yeah,
it's like you're outside the okay. thing.
Okay.
It's terrifying because you are like floating out there on the Titanic wreck and it feels like you are just in the water.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you'd see with an ROV, you'd be looking at, you know, screen. But they decided, no, let's give you that immersive experience of when you hit deploy, suddenly it's like it shoots you out of the submarine. You're in the water and it's all dark ocean around except for what limited light you have of the wreck. It's terrifying. It's cool stuff though.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I find the technology is super interesting. I'm not sure if this is the right move for Apple. I could have seen them try and pivot, and instead of trying to make a car, as trying to make parts of a car or maybe work with a manufacturer, it might have been better to try and do that. But
I bet knowing Apple, they probably looked at a lot of those options.
Yeah.
And again, it's not part of their culture to work with a joint venture.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They like right. to have that closed ecosystem. And
well, they've bought, you know, stuff. Oh, so. And you know, their whole success of late has all been logistics. It's kind of like where to buy all their little parts from in
right.
order to assemble their
yep.
their finished product. So, yeah, it's definitely, I think it kind of highlights the difference between a car industry, which is a heavily regulated, safety-oriented.
Pish-posh, man.
Pish-posh. Industry. And the whole... you know, so EV is kind of only a part of cars, right? Like right,
right.
now, most cars are not EVs.
That's right.
And
although
that will change over time. But, you know, if that's the only thing you're
except producing. Except here, apparently.
Well, yeah, here because it doesn't work great. But.
No, because we refuse to accept.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be.
Well, they just.
La, 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 la.
They just removed the moratorium on solar and wind projects.
They did.
Yeah, it was yesterday. And today I think they've announced they're lifting it, but they're introducing these moratoriums. Restrictions. And the yes. restrictions are like, can't be within 35 miles of a pristine area or something.
Fuck's sake.
Can't be taking
prime
agriculture.
As if we don't put oil rigs
wherever.
Fucking willy nilly. And oh, is this your land? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Did we spill on it? Oh, sorry. And they now require these solar and wind people to produce. They have to put like a bond in place yeah. for reclamation.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
well, so you know what? Goodbye investment. Right?
Yeah. Well, and apparently here's the thing. So in the year prior to the moratorium, which was, I think, November of last year. And the year before, 75% of all solar and wind projects were in Alberta.
Yeah, of course.
For the entire country.
Yeah.
Like it was booming here.
I know.
And they absolutely put the brakes on.
Of course.
And
innovation? Yeah, icky.
Yeah.
I think I might try to see if I can volunteer to become a strategist for the NDP.
Oh,
that sounds without any skill or, but I think I have the perfect slogan for them. No, I'm not kidding. This is
what are you stupid?
No, no.
No, I mean that is
instead of the to counter the TBA, right? Yeah. Which is what take
back Alberta.
Take back Alberta.
David Parker.
They should say, you know, move Alberta forward. Mm. Move Alberta forward.
Yeah.
Make it a positive message. Don't try to fight with these people.
Yeah.
For the majority of the people in the middle, make it a positive, because that's how Obama won.
Yeah, it was all about like, hope.
You know, yes, we can.
Yes, right? We can.
So move Alberta forward.
Make Alberta great again.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
You can sneak it in there.
Make Alberta gay again, maybe.
Exactly. Hey, what kind of media have you been consuming? You've been consuming any?
A little bit. I've been watching, I'm about halfway through the fourth season of True Detective.
Oh.
Which is really good.
Yeah, you were mentioning that last.
It's better than season three. I'm enjoying it. So it's supposed to be set in Alaska, but way above the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, you know, December 23rd, sixth day of night. But they couldn't film it up there. Too expensive to film it in Alaska. No infrastructure. So they filmed it in Iceland. And apparently they built a city, an American city, somewhere in Iceland to film this. So a lot of the buildings are just facades, but some of them are not, right? Some of the interior sets. So
that sounds really cool.
Yeah. So Iceland pretending to be Alaska. And they shipped all of the... A lot of Aboriginal actors, but it's a pretty neat idea. So that's quite good. Still watching Enterprise, you know, which is certainly not new, but catching up.
Is that Star Trek, the old version?
Yeah, Star Trek Enterprise. Yeah, and then with everything else that's going on, not much. Although I watched Rogue One, a Star Wars story again with Isaac. He'd seen it when he was really young. And last week he's like, I think I want to watch some Star Wars. Like, I need to catch up. Oh, because we went to the Star Wars exhibit at the Southgate Mall last Saturday.
I didn't know there was a Star Wars
exhibit. Yeah, so this is one of the world's largest private collections of Star Wars memorabilia. And how can I put this? When we came out of it, the kids were like, well, what did you think, Dad? And I'm like, you know what? It's an investment in something local happening. There. That's how I'm going to look at it. Because it was, well, put it this way. The most valuable piece of memorabilia in the whole exhibit is a desk, like a kid's desk from The Phantom Menace. Everything else was reproductions, homemade costumes. So it was a little bit hit and miss. Like they had a Chewbacca, is about 5'2" outfit. And it looked like, is that a Bigfoot with a bandolier? Like, what is that? So it was interesting. Cost me $80 for the four of us.
That's cool.
So
where is this? It's okay.
Well, it's closed now, but it was at, you know, where the New London Drugs is on that expansion.
Yeah.
There's a retail space just adjacent to it, which I guess is not occupied by a tenant full time. And so they had this exhibit for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun, but yeah, not because we had gone to the World of Science maybe 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They had a touring Star Wars exhibit, right? Which was all real memorabilia, you know, costumes from the movies. And this was worn by, you know, Mark Hamill, right? This was worn. That was impressive. So I think our expectation was maybe out of whack, you know? It's like, okay.
What have I been watching? Yeah. I have not really been watching. I watched some hockey games. There's more hockey games going on because Well, because the Oilers, when the Oilers, they won another game. They play again tonight. But, you know, they went on this 16-game legendary, almost a record. Like, I think 17 games in a row would have been a record. They won 16. And there's only one team that has done the 17, and it was like the Stanley Cup winning Pittsburgh Penguins in like 92 or something. Like, it's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
And then they went to the All-Star break and then proceeded to lose 6 of the last 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they lost the match. But they seem to be, at least the last game was much more in line with what they were doing.
Okay.
Their success.
Have you been this year?
No, I have not been. No. No. And I haven't been for a couple of years. So yeah. They're really
pricey. It's crazy pricey. Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to trying to watch, I'd like to see Dune. Dune comes in theaters in a couple of days.
I saw a endorsement, I guess, from Frank Herbert's son.
Oh, yeah.
Who said he saw...
Not the ghost of Frank Herbert?
No. He saw it in, pre-release, right? Preview, yeah. And he said the two movies together are, in his... opinion, the most like accurate or true representation of his father's book. So mm-hmm. He's totally endorsing it as just being phenomenal. So,
yeah. So for me, cool. I'm going away on Friday. I'm going to Vegas.
Right.
And in Vegas, I'm doing a few things. I'm going to go see a Cirque du Soleil show, the Beatles one.
Oh, I've heard that's good. All You Need Is Love, isn't that called?
I don't know. I think it's called The Beatles, but but it might be All You Need Is Love. It's something along those lines. So so we have tickets for that. We have tickets to see U2 at the Sphere. So I'm going to see that on Saturday
night. Oh, yeah. Oh, you mentioned.
And then...
Say hi to Bono for me. Tell him he owes me $20.
Well, apparently the drummer, Larry Mullen, has not been performing because he's injured. So they actually have a session.
A drum-based injury?
I don't know. I think he's had a few injuries.
These guys are old.
They are old. Well, they're not that old. They're only like, 5 or 6 years older than me. So they're not old. They're just
well, they're decrepit. Old. They're older.
I'm decrepit too.
Yes.
And then my wife is flying back, and then I am staying in Vegas for the largest photography conference on the planet. It's called WPPI, which is the Wedding and Portrait Photographers Institute or something like that. And
that should be fun.
And it's, and turns out, so it is at the hotel that I was planning on staying at for the Sphere. It's the same hotel.
Nice.
And then I found out that there's a whole bunch of people that I know that are going. So they're all like,
could it be better?
Couldn't be better. So it should be good. And then
imagine being the official photographer for that event, though.
The pressure.
A lot of pressure. Right? Everybody giving you advice.
I think you should have the light over there.
What filter are you using on?
Yeah.
Get away from me.
Yeah. Yeah. I found this on my iPhone. So anyway.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. So we won't have an episode next week.
That's okay.
And you guys are kind of tied up.
Stuff going on, yeah.
And then
I wouldn't have been able anyways because I have that full day
conference next week.
Course on recasting financials. I got my materials in the mail yesterday. I'm such a loser. I'm like, this is awesome. Hey, you got to love what you do, right?
Exactly.
It's like you getting a book on photography. You're like, this is cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, so let's wrap it up for this week.
Sounds good.
And we'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
Hasta la vista.
Take care. Bye.
Baby.